This is In Focus on News Radio KMAN.
Good morning. Welcome into In Focus on News Radio KMAN. It is a Friday morning, and it's the last Friday of the month, and that usually means we have the Raleigh County Police Department here in studio, and today is Dennis Butler, Director of the Raleigh County Police Department, joining us. How are you doing?
Good. Happy Friday, Brandon and Dave. It's good to see you again.
Absolutely. Pleased to see you again. I always try to start things off just kind of asking how things are going with our different guests. How have you been lately?
Oh, good. You know, I've been healthy. Have no reason to complain about anything. The family's doing well. We're hiring. I keep talking about that. Crime is very manageable. Our crime in July was below the 5-year trend, and overall serious crime was actually lower in July than it was compared to the same month last year, which somewhat surprised me, because we were really more locked down last July than we are now, and so I thought we'd see an increase. But I'm not complaining. But we have seen an increase in vehicle-related crimes, which has been a trend lately. We have citizens not locking their cars, leaving their keys in their cars, and at least half, if not more, crimes are related to unsecured vehicles, even stolen firearms. Firearms being left in unlocked cars is something that I still scratch my head about. Not that you have a gun, but the fact that you're not locking your car when you're not in it and leaving your gun in there.
That is just hard to believe that, you know, it's something that human error, maybe it's a lot of it's human error, but, you know, just having valuables. If you have valuables, lock them up. I mean, you don't want them taken.
Well, you know, I didn't intend to mention this, but, you know, I've had people over the years ask me about purchasing a firearm for personal protection. And, you know, they ask me, should they or shouldn't they? And I always tell them it's a personal choice. But I tell them, if you're inexperienced with them and you're thinking about doing it, treat it like you would a baby. So you wouldn't leave a baby unattended. You wouldn't not know where it is at all times. You would always make sure your baby was safe. You really should treat a firearm the same way to make sure there's no accidents or it's not stolen by somebody who shouldn't have it. So I could go on, but that's a basic criteria I tell them to think about. Surprisingly, a lot of people don't buy one after I tell them that.
Yeah.
But it's a personal choice.
Sure. And, you know, and it's good advice, too, because kids like to play around cars, too. And, you know, if they come across a firearm, that could be a dangerous situation.
Yes.
Well, that's good to know. And it's not just Raleigh County. I know Pottawatomie County has been dealing with this as well. We got a press release earlier this week about a situation up at Tuttle Creek State Park. I think some financial cards were stolen out of there, and they're trying to find, you know, the suspects who have been doing that. Financial crimes seem to be, I don't know if it's trending higher here, but it seems overall, those seem to be, there's new avenues that people are finding ways to scam people.
All the time. Criminals are very creative and clever, and they find new ways to separate law-abiding citizens from their money. Fewer people actually use cash in their daily lives. They use online banking and financial cards more and more, and it makes it easier to victimize folks. And the penalties are often not as severe as they are for violent crimes, and the criminals know that as well.
Well, and we talked to one school official this week, and I know it's still under investigation, but, you know, earlier this month we saw Raleigh County Schools have a scam, and they lost $115,000, and that's not a small amount of money. That is significant, especially for a school district that size, and hopefully at some point they'll be able to recoup that money.
Well, I hope so, too. It's under investigation, so I can't get into it too deeply. But the advice I give folks, especially about internet contacts and transactions, is really slow down and look at the formatting of an email and whether or not, if this is a usual transaction for what you're being contacted about. I have received emails from people that, if you look at the email, it looks like somebody I should know or be familiar with the organization, but I noticed the formatting wasn't the same from what I was used to, and I'd send it to our IT staff, say, this looks suspicious, can you check it out? And more than once, they've come back to me and say, well, this person's legitimate, this email is legitimate, but this link is going to send your reply somewhere else. It's very common, and it's when you're in a hurry, especially if you're in a hurry, it's easy to do something unknowingly and cause yourself to lose some money.
All right. Well, hopefully people will take that advice. Change your passwords, too. I get notes. I'm part of the National Weather Service chat here as a member of the media, and they make you update your password every 6 months. So that's a good time also to change my other passwords, and I typically do that from time to time. But that's another thing you probably should do frequently.
Yeah, that's good advice. We require it every 90 days in the police department, so even more frequently.
Mm. All right. Well, public safety is important, and you know, we get students back here in town, and it's amazing how different Manhattan is from 1 month to the next when the students come back. But you notice it, the traffic, you notice, you know, just kind of a different vibe here in the town. But it's good to kind of remind people, just kind of, you know, about different safety tips here when students come back.
Yeah, we're a college town. It's nice to see the increased activity. It shows the vibrancy of Manhattan during this time of year. I don't like sitting in traffic, but I enjoy seeing more people here. I think it's great for the community. In terms of crime, you know, we often talk about when students are here how there's an increase in crime, and I always qualify that by saying it's not necessarily because the students are committing the crime. Often the students are the victims of the crime. And so it's important to remember that. There's just more opportunities for victims to be identified as targets. So we often talk about educational approaches we can use with them to help keep them safe.
All right. And, you know, part of that is, I want to make sure we take care of anybody who's maybe a victim of sexual assaults, sexual crimes. Those are more prevalent in college communities like Manhattan, and you guys have resources. I know here you have an officer who handles that kind of activity.
Well, there's a few things I'd like to mention. First and foremost, we like to educate people about ways they can protect themselves. And we never blame victims for, you know, how late they're out or who they're with or what they're wearing. That's a big mistake, because it's inappropriate and it's really not helpful. But what we do is we try to educate folks before they become victims, because they can also help their fellow students and other people and their families. And it's things like, if you're out late at night, try to be with friends and people that you know. If you are one of those friends, don't leave a friend and go home and leave them with somebody that they just met that evening. Don't accept any sort of drink from somebody that you don't know if you didn't see it poured. Things like that, very basic. It's almost like the buddy system. Just take care of each other, keep an eye out for each other, and then these types of things are less frequent. When you mention an officer, we actually have a civilian victim advocate that works for us by the name of Melissa Mosier, and she helps people who've been victimized in violent crime assist our officers and assist them to navigate the criminal justice system, which can be pretty daunting for someone who's never experienced it before. So we help make it less scary and let them know what to expect. We refer them to other resources that we don't have, resources at the crisis center, mental health services, other things that can assist victims and witnesses in the aftermath of a crime. We hope by doing that they can navigate the process more confidently, remain engaged, help us hold the perpetrator accountable. So there's really a twofold purpose to that. And we do have detectives that are trained and specialize in domestic violence and sexual assault investigations.
I think it's really key to note kind of how these investigations are handled. that you guys will not press charges until the victim is ready, if I remember correctly.
Yes, we call it your option, your control. And there's really three main types of reports that we will take. You could be a third party and know that a friend of yours has been sexually assaulted or victimized. And we will accept that information and file a report with what you give us. And you may not even provide the victim's name, but we'll give you a case number. It's an information report, the date it was filed. And if the victim ever comes forward and wants to continue with the report, then we will open that back up and collect additional information and investigate as far as we can if that's what the victim wants. Sometimes the victim does not want an investigation right away, and they'll contact us firsthand, explain what happened, but say, I don't want you to go talk to anybody, I don't want you to interview anybody, and we respect that. It's really important in the aftermath of a sexual assault, especially, that we help a victim regain control over their lives by not telling them what to do. We present their options. You know, we call it your option, your control. We say, here are the options available to you. Some of that is referring them to the crisis center, for example, or legal aid, or some other resource that might assist them navigating this crisis. We could direct them to have a sexual assault kit taken, so we preserve the evidence from the assault until they decide what they want to do down the road. So we want to be supportive. We also have a role in terms of making sure the investigation is as thorough as possible. We're more thorough and we have more information and more cooperation. It's not a complaint when we don't, but we just want victims to know that we'll carry this out any way they choose.
That's kind of a very 21st century approach to these types of crimes, it seems like.
Well, it's not unique here in Manhattan. There's other places that do something similar. A lot of this this approach has been related to trauma-informed interviewing training. So we understand now that when, even if it's not a sexual assault, when someone has been traumatized or seen something that has traumatized them, they often react in ways that don't seem normal or they seem unusual. In the past, it was easy to misjudge or prejudge that reaction and make an assessment whether or not, you know, a crime even occurred. We've learned that's a big mistake. And so we train our officers very differently now. Part of that training is really allowing a victim to tell their story at their pace with the information they want to provide. We do ask follow-up questions, but we really want them to tell us what their experience was, and then we go from there.
Now, what happens if it's somebody who's afraid to come forward, but it's the same perpetrator, like multiple different people, same perpetrator? Is that what's the next step here from a police perspective, if you have like three different victims and it's the same perpetrator who's been assaulting them?
Well, unless the victims come in together, you know, we treat each victim individually, as I just described. Once we're aware that it could be the same perpetrator, which when you research these cases after someone has been arrested or identified, you often find that perpetrators are not committing a crime in isolation for the first time. We often learn that this is a pattern, and we usually identify other victims. And what we also find is once one victim realizes that they're not alone, oftentimes they are more willing to come forward and be cooperative because they know that they're not the only person. They often blame themselves. They often think they did something wrong to cause it to happen. But when they realize there's a serial perpetrator out there victimizing other people, it gives them more confidence to come forward and try to stop it.
Hmm. All right. Well, unfortunately, those crimes are all too common, not just here, but just nationally. That's a
and
it's a, as you mentioned, it's a trend for a lot of those perpetrators. 921 here on News Radio KMAN. Let's take a break. More In Focus returns after this on News Radio KMAN.